afternoon, Joe Degunda's with you for a special shortened version of the Country Hour due to our rolling coverage of the political situation in Canberra. What an extraordinary day, an extraordinary week it has been. We will, of course, keep you updated with any breaking news. In a nutshell, the Prime Minister has called a party room meeting for tomorrow. He said if a spill motion succeeds, he will not stand. And in that case, Australia will have a new Prime Minister tomorrow. But that's not the only thing happening today. Find out soon about the push for ag tech companies to make their products more accessible and a black frost wipes out stone fruit crops in southern Queensland. That's ahead on the Country Hour before two. But first, we're going to go straight to the weather because Michelle Berry is standing by from the Bureau of Meteorology. Michelle, we're all keen to see what's happening with this trough.
Yeah, absolutely, Jody. So you can actually see on our satellite imagery at the moment a very marked low-pressure system moving through the Great Australian Bight in South Australia. It's that system that's going to move into Queensland during Friday, into our far southwest, and then further eastwards over the state on Saturday. So that's going to be our showers and storm producer and also the rain areas that we're anticipating as well. Through today, not much rainfall expected. We might just see a late shower or storm in our far southwest. Bit of a better chance of storms then into Friday. On Friday, they're particularly expected around that sort of Maranoa and Warrego region, so Charleville to Roma, and then into potentially the southwestern Darling Downs. That's the best chance for a storm tomorrow. But that activity does increase further into Saturday, Zodi, and it's Saturday that's looking like our most active day in this event. We're anticipating quite a lot of storm activity, in fact, and some rain areas as well, particularly for areas south of about Emerald and near and east of Charleville to about the Great Dividing Range. So you're talking about areas like Charleville, Roma, Surratt in June, St George, Gundawindi, into the Carnarvon Ranges, that kind of zone. Well, we could actually, in fact, see some severe storms on Saturday. And they could have damaging wind gusts, large hail, but also some heavy rainfall as well. So it's in that zone that I think we'll see the higher rainfall totals on Saturday also. A lot of it will be associated with thunderstorms. And as we all know now, you know, thunderstorm rainfall can be very hit and miss. So I think broadly we'll see 5 to 30 millimetres in that zone, generally like in a fairly broad area. The higher totals, though, will be more isolated. We could even see some areas getting 50 millimetres or more with thunderstorms.
Right, even up to 50, right.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep, with thunderstorms in particular, because there could be quite a line of thunderstorms developing, you could end up seeing some isolated areas getting 50 millimetres or more.
All right, and what's the situation with temperatures?
Temperatures at the moment we'll actually see rising. So this morning was still chilly, but not quite as cold as previous mornings. Similar story for Friday. There'll still be a bit of morning frost around the southeastern interior, but then temperatures lifting further, the minimum temperatures, that is, into the weekend. So not much frost anticipated for the weekend, really, if any at all. Maximum temperatures, they'll be fairly cool under the cloud cover that we're anticipating with this trough over the weekend. So that's over the southern interior on Saturday with that cloud, and then that moves into the southeast overnight Saturday into Sunday morning. So that's where that rain band sort of focuses late Saturday into early parts of Sunday. And we should then see that storm focus moving into the southeast of the state late Saturday into early Sunday as well.
So has that eased the fire pressure across most of the state?
We're certainly expecting it to. There's still a lot of fires on the go at the moment, and there's also still high to very high fire dangers. We are anticipating, though, this increase in moisture and rainfall to then see those fire dangers, of course, dropping back significantly and hopefully providing some relief for our firefighters.
All right, Michelle, what about the coastal waters forecast?
At the moment, we've got fairly light winds over much of our coastal waters zone. Into our southern waters, the winds are generally going around more to the northeast now. As we go into Friday, they will turn more east and northeasterly, 10 to 15 knots. They could reach up to 15 to 20 knots in the evening over our southern waters tomorrow. In our northern waters, generally light winds, southeast and northeasterly winds, about 10 to 15 knots.
All right. Thanks so much, Michelle. We'll catch up with you again tomorrow.
Thank you, Jody.
Michelle Berry there from the Bureau of Meteorology. Michelle mentioned fires, and there is some good news for people near Rockhampton who'd been concerned about a bushfire at Mount Archer. The prepare to move notice has now been downgraded to advice only. That's in relation to a large, slow-moving fire at Mount Archer. Continue listening to the Queensland Country Hour for any further updates. And if you're on Facebook, you can follow ABC Capricornia for more updates. You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour. It's 25 to 2. The Queensland Police Service is warning rural business owners to be vigilant after it received a number of fraud complaints involving meat procurement and sales. The state coordinator of the Major and Organised Crime Squad, Rural, Detective Inspector Mick Dowie, says livestock owners should be aware of unlawful practices. He told Arlie Felton Taylor that while a number of cases are before court, he wants people to know that they must check carefully who they're dealing with.
Over recent months, we've charged some people in relation to offences where they've put in a very basic advertisement claiming to be able to get better export prices. They offer to do the kill of the cattle, and we've seen people thinking that they're in these very tough times going to get a better price for their cattle and the meat. You know, send through truckloads of high quality cattle, only to never see a cent in return. And the people will be alleging just pocketed the money from the sale of their cattle. So the warning is, unless you know who you're dealing with, unless you've done your due diligence, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it often is, and that's the old saying around.
Can you detail some of the amounts of money we're talking about?
No, the matters are all before the court, and obviously we have victims of these offences, so I can't. But you know, you can imagine with the price of beef, you know, it's a substantial amount of money. And people can't afford to be losing, you know, valuable stock and money through, you know, fraudulent activities based on the fact that they think they might be going to get a better price. We're just asking people to be very, very careful. These people are really professional. They can speak the industry talk, but yeah, they're taking advantage of a bad situation, unfortunately.
Is it just limited to beef, or does it go further to sheep meat, roo meat?
Yeah, no. So we have had one incident where they went into the game meat as well with roo meat. So, it just comes down to, it's like anything. Unfortunately, there's people out there who will take advantage of people when they're vulnerable. And we're just warning people, no matter what your circumstances are, sit down and really carefully think about who you're dealing with, do your homework, find out, you know, who they are, follow up on what they're claiming. The fact that you sign a contract doesn't mean anything to these people. Just be very careful.
I'm thinking from a rural enterprise point of view, often a lot of deals are done on the phone. That's the way a lot of business is done in the bush.
Yeah.
What other steps can people take?
Yeah, well, you know, like they can possibly speak to regular wholesalers, buyers that they've normally dealt with and say, you know, ask them, have you ever heard of this mob? If they have a concern that it's possibly a fraud, they can make contact with our members, even through our app. We have on the smartphone app for Stock and Rural Crime. You can email us direct and just make an inquiry. Obviously, you can research on the internet these days. You can, you know, any legitimate company should be able to have some sort of a platform people can go and do their due diligence on.
Finally, another warning sounded for people in rural and remote areas talking about trespassing.
Yeah, so, you know, beautiful weather at the moment. We're coming out of winter and into spring, and everyone will be wanting to get out and camping and all those sorts of things. We have been receiving numerous complaints about people experiencing, you know, coming across trespassers in very remote areas of their properties, especially the larger properties up in the Gulf area, but also even properties and farms, agricultural farms, you know, down in this west of the southeastern corner. So what I urge the farmers to do is look after themselves and their neighbours. If they see a vehicle that shouldn't be there, do whatever you can, but do it safely, to either get a photo of it or record the registration number. Don't put yourself in any danger, but, you know, you can challenge them, but don't do so in an unlawful manner. Even though they're trespassing, doesn't mean you can commit offences against them. So gather the intelligence, let us know, because often we'll find that people are using excuses like they're looking for a hunting dog, or they're just there hunting or fishing or whatever, and in reality is they're just trawling around properties looking for some opportunistic piece of machinery or equipment that they can steal. So that's a major concern, and the only way we can get on top of that is send a warning out to people not to be trespassing, get pre-approval before you go to a property, and if you're not approvable, don't go there. But if farmers do find people committing these sort of offences, again, you can call Crime Stoppers, you can call through PoliceLink, or you can go on to our app and email us and see and send us photos from your phone. We can't tolerate trespassing. People are hunting, especially with firearms, and no one knows that they're there. They don't, obviously don't know where the farmer or their employees are, so it creates a very dangerous situation.
Detective Inspector Mick Dowie there, State Coordinator of the Major and Organised Crime Squad Rural, speaking to Ali Felton-Taylor.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
It's 20 to 2, not when you'd usually listen to the Queensland Country Hour. Things all a little bit pushed around because of the political situation in Canberra. The push now, though, is on for agricultural technology companies to make their products more accessible. Compared to other industries like banking, agriculture has one of the lowest uptake rates of new technology in the country. Eric Barker caught up with some experts in the field of agricultural technology to discuss the issue.
David Lamb, Chief Scientist, Food Agility CRC.
I'm Ros Harvey. I'm the Founder and Managing Director of The Yield and also a Director on the Food Agility CRC Board.
Now, we've just had a bit of a talk here today, and it was supposed to be about drought. We sort of briefly brushed on it, but, I mean, it's something that's been broadcast heavily lately. You know, pictures of ground cover completely lost and animals not doing so well. But in the technology space, how can it, you know, help this sort of situation that we're going through at the moment?
Well, while the emphasis today was around innovation in the agri-food sector, the thing about drought is it often clarifies and crystallises the thinking around, well, what are the immediate challenges that the industry faces and what can we maybe do not only to deal with it and recover from it, but also to make sure we're better prepared for it moving forward. So ag technologies, or I guess the power of digital, has a whole range of angles that it can contribute. Simple things like, understanding the weather and what's happening. Understanding our resources on farms, for example, where our water is, what our assets are like. What support mechanisms have we got around us to get the best out of what we offer into the food supply chain. So, you know, at the end of the day, drought helps us focus our thinking. It's a critical time now, but tomorrow, the next day, the rains will be back. We'll be back on our feet and it's back to business innovating. And so digital tech, very powerful. Water management, asset management, getting the best out of our limited feed, maintaining the health and diversity of our landscapes, and getting the supply chain most efficient in supporting the moving of food, as in hay for feed, for example, moving of water and the moving of commodities out.
Moving of water and water security is something that has definitely been brought up in the conversation when it's talking about the long-term management of drought, but your research ties into that a little bit. Ros, what have you been up to?
Okay. Oh, well, The Yield, actually, what we focus on is taking the guesswork out of growing, and the biggest guesswork of them all is driven by weather. And every grower knows that every paddock is different, and the way that we use limited resources and inputs, including irrigation, needs to match what the crop needs in that particular part of the field, in that particular farm. So what the Yield has been doing is using real-time data and artificial intelligence to create these highly localised predictions and then turn them into decision support tools to help people make better, faster decisions on how to use things like water. So for us, it's really been a very exciting time. There's a lot of very, very complex leading-edge technology, you know, real-time data, artificial intelligence, all these things. But really what it comes down to is how you turn all of that into something really simple that growers will use because it makes sense. And that's often what's forgotten. The last step is just as important as all the clever technology, is how do you design beautiful apps that solve real business problems for farmers in a way that they love to use.
You spoke a bit about the whole water security issue, and you looked at the cost of it as a big thing, you know, comparing it from what it costs in the north to what it costs in New South Wales and Victoria. But have you been doing any work in that space looking at water security?
Well, only insofar as understanding where the water is, how much we actually need to deploy in the field, and of course, if it's not where we need it, how can we access it? So it really is a case of understanding the asset itself, and that's probably 90% of the so-called security issues. So we know in crops, take cotton for example, that we can double the bales of cotton we produce per megalitre by simply the judicious application of water just where it is needed and no elsewhere. So that's water left over that can be pumped or not pumped out of our rivers, it can flow on for our environmental flows. We know that there are two orders of magnitude when it comes to buying water from the north versus the south, simply because of where it is, where it's available, compared to where it's needed.
Following up, Dave, our customers are reporting that they're getting a 30% reduction in the amount of water that they need to achieve the same crop outcomes. So every single drop that we save in a drought situation, in a constrained environment, is really, really important for growers.
We got one more question for everyone, and then I'll wrap it up. But we're just talking about the adoption of these technological breakthroughs and how, at the moment, all the data shows that in the agricultural sector, it's a lot lower than other sectors, such as the financial sector, for example. What can you be doing to, I guess, encourage people to, or more than just encourage people, just get those adoption rates up?
Okay, two answers to this question. First of all, you know, the most fundamental thing is we have to have better technology. I think the technology sector has let down the agricultural sector. Every single farmer uses consumer apps like anybody else, and they use them like we all do. The problem is that often when technology is created for growers from research community, they're just not very user-friendly. And if you have to train somebody to get them to use an app in the digital economy, you have manifestly failed. So I think the challenge is actually to technology providers to really make sure that they produce beautiful technology. And if you do that, you get great adoption rates. So for example, in our free app, which shows you evapotranspiration, which is the amount of water that a plant uses, we have double the normal industry adoption and use of that product. And I think it's because we spent hours and hours and hours with growers understanding how they wanted to use data and how to actually make it easy.
Dave?
There's an education dimension to this as well, and this is where education providers are targeting all age groups have got to get their finger out and get their game right. You know, at the end of the day, our kids are already the agents of change for this sort of innovation in the sector, so we need them up and through moving into the ag sector. In the meantime, as Ros pointed out, we've got an existing workforce, an average age of 55, to try and get comfortable and confident with technology, and it has to be about making things simple and intuitive to use. But at the same time, you don't use cheap and cheesy either, because if a technology is perceived as failing, you're going to have a harder road back to build the confidence again. So it's got to be good, but it's got to be intuitive and easy to use.
David Lamb from the Food Agility CRC finishing that story from Eric Barker.
He told me, the only person to change you is you. I listened.
Do you know a young person with a story to tell?
Eating disorder. A diagnosis. Deep down, something I'd longed for.
Haywire is looking for stories about what it's like growing up in regional Australia.
There are lots of dams where my family love to go swimming.
Winners get their story featured on the ABC and win an all-expenses-paid trip to the Haywire Regional Youth Summit in Canberra.
I met new people. I learnt new things.
Entries are open now. Go to abc.net.au/haywire.
Yeah, it's well worth entering. So if you've got a young person you know, if you are a young person, make sure you do get online and enter the Haywire competition. You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour. It's 12 to 2. Freezing temperatures earlier this week have caused a black frost, which has wiped out some crops on a southern Queensland stone fruit grower's farm. According to Andrew Finlay's on-farm records, it was the second coldest morning in 35 years and the coldest ever for August. It saw the mercury plummet to -9.6 on the Pike Creek Orchard on Tuesday this week. Mr. Finlay says the damage to stone fruit crops is varied, and it may take some time to fully assess what losses they'll see. He says he couldn't quite believe just how cold it got this week.
It's not an official weather station, it's just the normal digital inside outside. We've got a reader outside, and that reader's a couple of feet off the ground. The mercury plummeted to -9.6 on Tuesday morning. That's the second coldest reading I've recorded here in 35 years, and it's the coldest August morning that we've had here.
Tell me where that temperature was recorded.
So that temperature was recorded, so it's in the bottom of a valley and sort of quite high hills right around, so the cold air will cool down in the bottom of the valley. And it was just recorded a couple of feet off the ground on a post out in the middle of the garden just outside the house.
As a stone fruit grower, frost can often be a good thing at the right time, but this isn't the case in this instance, is it, Andrew Finlay?
No, look, you need frost and cold weather through the winter for trees to get their chilling requirement to flower. But once you move past that and go into bud development and bud swell and flowering, frost's not your friend any longer, it's your enemy. And so anywhere that gets exposed to temperatures below about -3°C, you can then result in crop losses.
Obviously, the frost situation exacerbated by the fact that there hasn't been much moisture around. It's very dry. So would it be what you'd call a black frost?
Yeah, certainly. I look and you look out of a morning, you know, at -9.6, you would think it would look white like a snowfield with the amount of frost. But the frost is very hard to see. It is so dry. There is so little moisture. The air is so dry. There's no dew. And so when you look out, you can see little bits of frost, but to parts of the ground, you see absolutely no frost at all. And that's really damaging to any crops that are susceptible to frost because the moisture is just sucked out of everything.
So with that, what damage have you seen?
We've got one small block of nectarines, only young trees, and so there wasn't going to be a great yield come out of there, but they were lost. They had overhead sprinklers over the top of them with a duty of about -6°C, which has worked well for us up until this particular year, but at -9.6, it wasn't quite that cold in the orchard, but it must have been down at -7.5, -8, and so there's just nothing you can do there.
It's a shame to lose a whole crop. That's quite a blow.
Yes, it is, but it's in the scheme of things, they're only young trees, and so it's only a very small part of our production.
What about other losses?
In our orchards, no losses, but there are losses I'm aware of around the district, and we won't really know the extent of that for a little while yet until that damage sort of really starts to manifest itself when fruit stops developing. There are some that's very obvious, but some of it that's not obvious, and there'll be some fruit in there that's not damaged, and so it just takes a little while for all that to settle out and see what the true picture is.
So a bit too early to tell, and is that the case with a lot of your neighbours too?
Yeah, look, it is a bit early to tell. I know, talking to them, there's mixed results. There are blocks that have got no damage in them. It depends on where that fruit was in its developmental cycle. Obviously, the more advanced it is, then the more susceptible it is to cold temperature damage. There are blocks that were only just sort of coming into flower or at a little bit more backward stage than that, and there's no losses in there at all. So it really is a block-to-block thing. Also, the frost settles in different areas, so if you've got a hilly terrain, you'll understand that where the cold air pools, it gets colder. So you can see, within blocks, you can see areas where the damage low in the block, the damage will be much more pronounced and significant, whereas you can go up into the higher end of the block and there may not be any damage at all.
Andrew Finlay, we'll keep in contact with you to find out how your crops are going to yield and indeed how the whole of the stone fruit industry in that Stanthorpe region goes after this particularly tricky winter spell, those terribly cold temperatures. But obviously looking to the skies, looking to this weather event potentially happening this weekend, what are your hopes? What would be just the ticket for you?
Oh, look, I think like everybody, the more rain we get now, the better. I think everybody in the towns, everyone out in farms on the land, no matter whether you're involved in horticulture, whether you've got livestock or whether you're actually running one of the businesses in town, droughts like the one we're having now are just horrific. And so we would love to see 40 or 50 millimetres. If there was 100 millimetres came, we'd take that as well. But I think even to lay some dust, Ali, would if we get 15 or 20 mils or something out of it, and that seems to be where the forecasts are settling. We'll take that, and hopefully what it does mean is the change in the pattern, and this will be the first of a number of ones to come through that hopefully will give us some different outcomes than we've had in the last 12 months or so.
Yeah, let's hope that system does deliver for those who need it. Andrew Finlay there of Pikes Creek, 40 kilometres southwest of Stanthorpe on the Texas Road, speaking with Ali Filton-Taylor. You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour at 6 to 2. We've got some sad news from Western Queensland this afternoon. After nearly 100 years, a pivotal country women's association, the Winton Branch, is shutting its doors. One member of 67 years says it's a sad day when such an important part of the rural community folds. The state organisation, though, says it's a trend they're hoping to turn around. Anita Bolle reports.
Queensland's CWA has been an important constant in outback Australia. It's brought together isolated women since 1922, but times are changing. Rosie Archer has been a member of the Winton branch for over 60 years and says while she's not surprised, she is disappointed to see the branch close.
There are only about six of us left. People just weren't coming to meetings anymore. You know, there wasn't anything happening. It's just they're all older people, retired people, or older as me, or not quite probably, but But, you know, it's just nobody can get there. They're too busy.
Ms Archer says with an ageing membership pool and transient township, sustaining the group wasn't possible.
There are a few younger people, but most of them wouldn't take any of the positions. For a while, a few younger people did join. We supposedly had our meetings in the morning, and they changed it to the afternoon so that ones like school teachers, people like that, could come to the meeting. We had a few there. We even had a couple of police women that were joining, that joined for a while. So that sort of helped the numbers a bit.
With the drought in Western Queensland rolling into its fifth year, Miss Archer says the dry conditions haven't helped numbers.
Well, the drought hasn't been much help. There's been lots of droughts in times gone by, but it's been really bad this time. Definitely a decline in population. I think there's 900, but I'm not sure of that. But I know when I first came to live in town, there were at least 1,100. There's certainly not that amount now.
Former Winton branch president Melissa Doyle says it hit her particularly hard as a younger member.
It was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking being a younger participant with CWA and all the hard work of the ladies before me to sit there and make that decision. It was a really hard decision to make.
She agrees that the drought hasn't helped the situation.
The drought has impacted not on just CWA, it has a great impact on the town. It affects families. Families have to go away for work if job opportunities and stuff dry up.
Winton is the third branch in Western Queensland to close its doors in the past couple of years. Beyond that, there's a longer list of disappearing branches across the state, including Marlborough, Yeppoon, Junda and Ilfracombe. Ms Doyle believes it's unfortunate because groups like hers are needed now more than ever.
That's the most important thing about CWA. It did bring a group of women locally together, even on stations they used to come in, and that was something that we discussed on Wednesday, how important that will be to maintain those relationships, to keep something going, whether it's a regular morning tea meetup, whether we have afternoon teas, cake stalls in the street still, just for the social interaction.
Queensland CWA Vice President Janice Street says the state organisation hasn't given up on Winton yet.
It makes me feel sad. Actually, I still only call it temporary closure because I'm going out there on Friday and going to Winton and organise a meeting with the town ladies, and hopefully I can form that branch again because it was so important. It was formed in 1924 and it's such a big part of that little town. And, you know, it was so important in the early days. I can remember reading where they used to feed the army. So right from day one, it has been such an important branch.
Ms Street will travel to Winton tomorrow to ask members to reconsider.
I just hope, you know, we can talk, not talk people into it, but, you know, encourage people to join for the good of, you know, for the good of the country, because we're so important in these little towns where we have such a big job to support all the families in these towns.
But Miss Archer remains sceptical the branch will reopen.
Well, I can't see it. You know, it sort of died.
Yeah, well, let's hope they do defy the odds, though, and get it back up and running sometime. That's former Winton CWA member Rosie Archer, ending that story by Anita Bolle. You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour. Let's check markets now. And let's cross to the Roma Prime sale. Trevor Hess has all the quotes.
Good afternoon. Numbers lifted by 24% to 657 at the Roma Prime sale today, and cattle were drawn from the usual supplier areas, and good heavy cows were in the largest numbers, along with a small sample of grown steers and grown heifers, plus a few heavy bulls. Most of the usual export buyers were in attendance and operating. Prices for heavy grown steers and bullocks experienced only quality-related price changes. However, medium-weight plain condition cows could not maintain the levels of the previous week's sale, while the better end of the cows generally sold to a firm market. The three-score heavy grown steers averaged 248, while the better lines averaged close to 261. Bullocks made to 266.2 to average 260. Grown heifers made to 226, most around 203, and poor condition cows averaged 123, and medium weight two scores averaged 158. The best of the medium weight cows averaged 200 and made to 203. A large sample of good heavy cows averaged 204, made to 213.2, and heavy bulls made to 236.2. This has been Trevor Hess from MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thanks, Trevor, and that's it for this very different edition of the Queensland Country Hour today. Thanks so much for your company this afternoon. I'll be back with you from midday tomorrow. All things going well in Canberra. Who knows? We'll find out what happens. It's 2 o'clock now. Time for the news.